It was a near-death experience this week for the investment bank industry. 6 months ago, there were five: Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, and Goldman Sachs. Last week, there were four. Monday morning, three. And by Monday afternoon, just two. NPR's Adam Davidson explores the history and the significance of this once crucial type of bank.
If you don't quite understand what an investment bank is, don't feel bad. The core nature of investment banks, their defining purpose, is to be something the average American has little contact with. Raghu Rajan is a former chief economist at the IMF. He teaches at the University of Chicago Business School. He explains that by their very nature, investment banks don't have checking or savings accounts. That's actually how you define them. They have a different role.
They essentially are the middlemen on the markets.
The stock and bond markets.
The stock and bond markets, that's right.
Investment banks help companies issue new stocks or new bonds, and they find customers who want to buy those stocks and bonds. Before 1933, before the Great Depression, there wasn't a formal division. Banks could take deposits, make loans, and they could also create and sell stocks and bonds. Then came the Great Depression, and a popular theory that those big combined banks were to blame. Why? Because those big banks, the theory went, would foist lousy stocks and bonds on their unwitting checking and savings account customers.
So that was the view, that these conflicts of interest were terrible and these had polluted the stock and bond markets, which was why there was the crash of 1929 and terrible things happened to the economy.
As it happens, this theory has been studied to death since then by lots of economists.
All the academic studies came to the conclusion that the banks, which combined, were actually safer because they were diversified and they actually issued better quality bonds, that there weren't terrible conflicts of interest by combining them.
Eugene White is an economist at Rutgers. He says we now know big combined banks tend to be safer. But back in 1933, many in Congress, and specifically Senator Carter Glass and Congressman Henry Stiegel, thought differently. They passed the Glass-Steagall Act outlawing universal banks, these single banks that do both things: take deposits, and also issue and sell stocks and bonds. Now, it shouldn't be a surprise, but the big banks did not like this mandatory breakup plan. So they worked out a deal with Congress. The commercial banks would get government guarantees, that's FDIC insurance, which was created with Glass-Steagall, but they had to follow stricter rules. The new investment banks had a lot more freedom, but they got no government guarantees. Now, for most of the 20th century, at least some of those high-risk, no-guarantee investment banks did great. Sure, some of them collapsed, but the big ones, like the five that existed at the start of this year, they liked how things were. In fact, when Glass-Steagall was repealed in 1999, the big investment banks all said, "No thanks. We don't want to remerge. We'll stay the way we are." Until, of course, this week. After seeing Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers collapse, Merrill Lynch and Morgan Stanley decided that they might need a commercial bank partner too, just in case. Only Goldman Sachs is left out fully on its own. We might be heading back to a world of big combined banks. Eugene White.
So the interesting thing is we end up almost where we were in the 1920s.
Both Rajan and White agree that reversing 75 years of economic history in 1 week is pretty painful. But in the long run, it could turn out to be a good thing that investment banks and commercial banks are free to get back together. Adam Davidson, NPR News, New York.
And for more on the financial crisis, take a look at our new Planet Money blog. It's at our website, npr.org/money.